If the election of Donald Trump was an earthquake, his accomplishments since are the aftershocks no one saw coming. From best-selling author Stephen E. Strang comes Trump Aftershock, the seismic impact on culture and faith in America. Trump Aftershock offers unique insights that will cut through the media noise and reveal what they won't tell you. Gain a better understanding of the political, emotional, and spiritual dimensions at work in Trump Aftershock. Available where fine books are sold.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to the Strang Report. Well, today is a national day of mourning for President George H.W. Bush. I know that many of you will listen to this later, but I just wanted to share my own thoughts because I had the opportunity to interview him and to meet with him several times during his administration. In fact, he was the first U.S. president that I personally met. I had been in the same room with Richard Nixon and Jimmy Carter, but didn't even get to shake their hand. But with George Bush, I was a young journalist. I would have been in my early to mid-30s. And I was friends with Doug Weed. And Doug is someone I had known actually since I was a teenager. He's a few years older than me. He was having some success as a writer. He was involved with politics. And he got involved early with George Bush's campaign. In fact, he told the Bush campaign that they really needed to connect with the evangelical community. And as a result of that, the Bushes took his advice to heart, and he really carried a lot of the evangelical vote. And as a result of that, Doug Weed got a position in the White House where he was sort of liaison for religious affairs, although I don't remember if that was his exact title. But before the president was elected, I met with him several times. The first time was when he was traveling around the country meeting with various people, and Doug set up a meeting of Christian leaders, probably about 30, as I recall, in Orlando, where I live. And I was invited to go. We went and were able to shake hands, and I have a picture of the event. And then Vice President Bush talked about some of his policies and so forth. A little bit later, I went to a much bigger meeting in Washington, D.C. at the Naval Observatory, which is the official vice presidential residence there in Washington. It was in the summer of 1986, and the Christian Bookseller Association Convention, which was a big, big deal back then, was actually in Washington, and Doug arranged for a number of leaders in the publishing industry and a few others to come and to meet with the vice president. I wrote about this in my Strang Report newsletter, and you may be interested in looking it up online, but I'll just tell you what I said. I remember several publishing people who were there, friends of mine who you probably wouldn't know their names, but there were also some big names like Tammy Faye Baker, Jimmy Swaggart was there, Jerry Falwell was there. The interesting thing is that only about 12 months later, the PTL scandal happened, and then 9 or 10 months after that, the Jimmy Swaggart scandal happened. Jerry Falwell stepped in and took control of PTL for a time, and it was just interesting. You know, in that era, I was aware that they'd all been at this meeting and all that happened later. That's just a little aside. But in that meeting, we all got our picture taken with the vice president and his wife, Barbara. And then he talked to the group. And different people asked him about where he was in his faith walk. And he kind of danced around the issue. He said that he was an Episcopalian and that church was very important, and he'd been raised in the church and attended church regularly. But he said in their tradition, their religious tradition, they don't really use terms like born again and so forth. This was a private meeting other than people like me. There was no press there at all, and I did not write about it, as I recall. That group merely wanted him to say he was born again or something to that effect. But, you know, someone's faith is very private. I know that President Donald Trump, who I believe has a deep faith, he is also very reluctant to talk about it. A lot of times these politicians will be attacked. I do believe that George H.W. Bush was a very sincere Christian. I believe he served the Lord the best he could based on how he was raised and the church he attended. He certainly seems to be a moral man. He seemed to have a lot of integrity. There was never a scandal. He was a good family man. He raised his family in the church. In fact, there's a very interesting picture that's on the back of the book, The Faith of George W. Bush. Of course, that was a book about his son, a book that I published, a book actually that was my idea, and we recruited Stephen Mansfield to write it. He did a magnificent job, and the book ended up being our first New York Times bestseller, and Time Magazine even wrote about the book and the impact that he had. But when it came time to design the cover, we came up with this wonderful black and white photo of the Bush family walking out of their church, and George Bush looked like he was maybe an older teenager, and then they were kind of stair steps going down, and for some reason they went to church and somebody took a picture of it. You know, probably nobody had the idea that George Bush would be president when they took the picture, but I just thought it was a very fitting picture. He did raise his family in the church. George W. Bush ended up being kind of secular, in fact, kind of a playboy by his own admission. He says that when he was young and stupid, he was young and stupid. And he actually developed a drinking problem that at age 40, you know, I don't know if it's really fair to say he was an alcoholic, but if he wasn't, he was pretty close. And his wife supposedly told him that it was either her or Johnny Walker, and he decided to walk the straight and narrow. He really got his life straightened out. And about that era, he prayed to receive Christ, and we would say he was an evangelical Christian. And I believe that he was and still is a very sincere Christian, although he is very, very quiet about his faith. He certainly doesn't wear it on his sleeve. But in the process of writing that book, The Faith of George W. Bush, we found out an awful lot about his family and how he was raised and how his father was raised. His grandfather, Preston Bush, was a U.S. senator. They were kind of a privileged family. You know, obviously being a U.S. senator is a very prestigious position, but also the family was fairly wealthy. They had a family home up in Kennebunkport, which the family still has. And I've been up to Kennebunkport. Never been at the home, of course, but the tour bus does take you by and say, behind there is the compound. And of course, we've all seen certain pictures that have been taken there, and it's quite elaborate, and only the very well-to-do have vacation homes like that. George H.W. Bush went into the service when he was very young. He was one of the youngest, I guess you would maybe call it, fighter pilots. He was shot down. He was rescued out of the Pacific. All of his buddies on the same mission died. He wondered why God spared him. Of course, he had quite a distinguished career, and God obviously had a plan for his life. After World War II, he married Barbara. He got an education. He went into the oil business and was quite successful. As time passed, he was elected to be a congressman. And over the course of his career, he was the director of the CIA. He was an ambassador at one point. He had one of the best political resumes of any of our president. He ran in 1980 against Ronald Reagan. He was a very competitive opponent. He said some things, you know, in the heat of the political moment about Ronald Reagan that he later ended up kind of eating his words, as politicians sometimes have to do. Because Ronald Reagan picked him as his running mate, partly to unify the party. And George Bush was, in my opinion, a very good vice president and very supportive of President Reagan. That was a very pivotal time in American history. And then when President Reagan's time came up, the Constitution limits the president to 2 terms, 8 years in office, George Bush decided to run. And it had been about 150 years, give or take, since a sitting vice president had been elected president, and George Bush did win. Interestingly, control of the White House tends to go back and forth between the Democrats and the Republicans and has every 8 years since Harry Truman. First Truman, and then Dwight Eisenhower, of course, and then the Democrats had it with both Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson after Kennedy was assassinated. And then Richard Nixon, along with Gerald Ford, had it for 8 years. And then Jimmy Carter only had it for 4 years. He was such an unpopular president. The economy was in such bad shape. America was so weak that Americans elected a very strong leader in Ronald Reagan, and I believe turned the course of the country and also helped to bring down communism, which as I was growing up, we thought communism was something we would have to live with for the rest of our lives and maybe several generations. But it didn't actually come down until after Ronald Reagan was out of office. It actually came down during George H.W. Bush's administration, and President Bush, you know, had to deal with all of the things things with communism coming down, America being the only superpower, and that sort of thing. But anyway, I was telling you that I met George H.W. Bush first in Orlando and then the meeting in Washington, D.C. And then after he was elected, but before he was inaugurated, he invited a group of Christian leaders to Washington to supposedly advise him on who he should make for cabinet appointments. And it was quite a group. I remember that Paul Crouch was there, Dr. James Dobson, James Robison, Jerry Falwell, Beverly LaHaye of Concerned Women for America. It was kind of the cream of the crop, and Doug Weed is the one who put it all together. And in that group, he invited me. I was quite young. I had never been to a meeting like that in the White House before. And it was a little bit intimidating, I will admit. I was not really called on, so I mostly just listened. But it was very interesting to hear the conversation. I know exactly who was there because I have a picture. I have it framed in my office, and I've seen it many, many times. And it's just a matter of trying to identify the people in the picture to know who was in the meeting. Interestingly, I don't think the meeting had a whole lot of impact. I think that President Bush had already pretty much made up his mind, but, you know, it was protocol to ask different groups of his supporters for who they wanted to have him, you know, appoint. That was the third meeting I had with him. And then after he was in office in 1992, on the National Day of Prayer in the early part of May, the White House observed the National Day of Prayer by having about 200 evangelical leaders and a few other religious leaders. I remember there were a couple of rabbis and represented from the Orthodox Church and also Roman Catholics, but it was mostly evangelical leaders. I remember that Bill Hybels was there and Larry Lee. And again, Doug put this together, and Doug was my friend, and he was all the time asking me for favors of various kinds, and I guess he wanted to stay on my good side. So he actually invited me to sit at the table with the president. There were 8 or 9 other people at the table, as I recall, including a representative from the Catholic Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, and several others. And I'll tell you, it was very intimidating to have breakfast with the president of the United States. And President Bush was briefed on all of us. He had a piece of paper. He read our names and, you know, visited with each of us around the table. And then we were each able to ask him something. I had done a little bit of research and found out that later that day he was meeting with a dignitary, maybe an ambassador from Lithuania. And I had been in Lithuania on my first trip to Russia. I went to Russia, and then I went to the 3 Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania on that trip. And I knew very much from talking to people that they very much wanted freedom from the Soviet Union. So I made some observations about that and just said that I really hoped that the United States would back their efforts. As time passed, the United States was supportive. They were able to break away from the Soviet Union and to become their own country. So those were my personal interactions with President Bush. I did not have the privilege of seeing him after he was president. I did have interaction with his son, George W. Bush, on numerous occasions and was able to interview him. So I have a lot of respect for the Bush family. One of his other sons, Jeb Bush, was the governor of the state of Florida, where I live. So the Bushes have had a big impact on American life with a father and son who are president. That's only been one other time in American history. That was John Adams and John Quincy Adams, for you history buffs. Then, of course, the Bushes. They were very family-oriented. George Bush was a loving father. He was always very supportive of George W. Bush. And all of this kind of thing is coming out now with the eulogies that are happening since he passed away a few days ago. No matter when you are listening to this, I believe that it's important and interesting to know about President Bush. His legacy will live on for many years. He will be remembered in American history for as long as there is an America, which I hope is, you know, many centuries to come, if the Lord tarries that long. He was a great man. I believe he was a good man. I believe he was a good president. He wasn't, in my opinion, the same kind of forceful leader that Donald Trump is. And as you know, I have documented President Trump's election with my book, God and Donald Trump, and then the sequel, which I'm in the process of publicizing now, called Trump Aftershock. And I have done a number of podcasts, as you well know. And actually, interestingly, my podcast numbers have gone way up since I've started doing more podcasts and talking about President Trump, and I will be talking about it again. I will let you know that I am on my way to New York City very, very soon. I will be on two Fox programs, and I will be telling you about them and hopefully even sharing them as podcasts, you know, getting permission and getting those little clips. So I'm excited about that. I believe that the Lord is opening up some doors. I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity the Lord has given me. I'm also grateful to have loyal followers like you. And I appreciate you listening to my podcast, even on days like this where I just opine. Often I interview people, and my podcasts are a wide variety. I'm learning how to do all this stuff, you know, fairly late in my career, but it's a whole lot of fun. You know, there's probably a lot more that I could say or should say about President Bush. I don't pretend that I have really eulogized him in the way that he deserves, but I have shared my own interaction with him. I'll remember him, of course, the rest of my life. I'm very honored to have had the privilege to meet him and to have had breakfast there at the White House and been able to ask him a question. I do consider that, for those who may be interested, an interview. It was not an in-depth interview. It was not a unique interview, but I consider that I was able to interview George H.W. Bush as a journalist, as I was with his son, which was actually a group interview with several other journalists. That was more of a press conference kind of interview. And I interviewed Barack Obama in a group setting with a group of evangelical leaders during the campaign that he was trying to woo. And we were able to ask questions. And because I was used to doing press conferences and kind of jumping in, I was one of the first to ask some questions of President Obama. And then, of course, when Donald Trump ran, I was able to get an exclusive interview with him. And I've been promised another interview. And as soon as that happens, of course, I'll probably talk about it in a podcast and we'll, of course, write about it. I think that there may be another book on the horizon in which I can share some of those things, but I'm going to not tip my hand any more than saying what I'm saying now. I hope that you've enjoyed my recollection. I am kind of a history buff, as you know. I pay attention to these kinds of things. I realize that in my own small way, I'm participating in history by interacting, you know, with some of these world leaders. And as I've said before, I am so grateful to the Lord for the doors that he's opened and for the opportunities that he has given. And I hope that I am just a good representative of the Lord and that I am faithful in the calling that he's given me. So with that, I'll wrap up this edition of the Strang Report. I'll just say that I thank God for the life and legacy of President George H.W. Bush, and may he rest in peace. Thank you for listening to the Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. I'm Stephen Strang.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.